You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR LP 92.9 FM Los Gatos, and KMRT LP 101.9 FM Santa Cruz. Tony Duchesne here, and welcome to Drinks with Tony. I'm so excited about this episode because I get to interview a debut novelist. What's special about this debut novelist? One, she's a punk rock mom. Yeah, right there, that just makes you cool as hell. But when you're a novelist and a punk rock mom, that's twice the cool. Even better, she's 63. This is her first novel, and it's out on Soho Press. I'm so excited for this interview, and I can't wait for you to be inspired, because you could start anytime as a novelist. You just have to be great. And Tony, how can I be great? Well, I'm glad you asked. I'm doing a novel workshop from April 20th to May 18th. We're going to be meeting on Monday nights at 6 p.m. via Zoom. Limited to 6 students. Go to drinkswithtony.com or tonyduchesne.com. Either or. They all get you there. And find out. You can join us. We have a lot of fun. One of my students went off and had a 2-book, 6-figure deal. How do you do that? I think that's great. I love it when my students are bigger authors than I am. So let's create more of you. Also, if you're looking for free workshops, I am hosting a creative writing workshop at the Los Feliz Public Branch Library. Just show up at 6 p.m. on April 1st. That's 6 p.m. on April 1st at the Los Feliz Library on Hillhurst and Franklin. But wait, you want even more notice? Because April 1st is here, or you may even be listening to this on April 2nd. Well, get ready, because May 6th is the next library workshop I'll be teaching at the Los Feliz Branch Library. So, novel writing workshop, come on, join us. 6 students, let's go. Drinkswithtony.com or tonyduchesne.com for more information on that. And now, on with the show.
Hi, I'm Frances Crawford, and you're listening to Drinks with Tony. Get on the Drinks with Tony show,
yeah. You're listening to Drinks with Tony. I'm your host, Tony Duchesne. Today on the show, we have Frances Crawford. She's the author of A Bad, Bad Place, a novel. Frances, how are you?
Hello, Tony. I'm good, thanks.
Well, congratulations on your debut novel, and I'm going to do the thing that a guy's never supposed to ask a woman, but you got your debut novel out at what age?
63, Tony.
Yes! Oh my God! These are the success stories I want to hear. 63-year-old debut novelist. Frances, how do you get to this point? I have a ton of questions for you, but I'll just throw that huge general one at you. How do you get to this point? And congratulations. I'm so excited. I'm your cheerleader over here.
Thanks, Tony. That's really kind. To be honest, it's not a place I expected to be myself. I never expected to have a novel out. I never expected anyone to sign it. I never expected to get a publisher. Never mind published in America as well. It's been like a mad surreal dream, you know, and I just keep expecting to wake up. It is so strange. I only got to this position because I went back to education late in life, you know, that midlife crisis thing, and obviously there's no way I'm getting a motorbike. So I went back. I went back to university and did creative writing, and that was the path that set me off on it.
So when you're growing up, well, first off, what were you doing before you had your extreme midlife crisis, looked dreamingly at that motorbike and went, I might crash. And then you're like, wait, I'll do this really bad idea where I work on something for years and then no one ever sees it, but maybe someone will see it. So what were you doing before that?
To be honest, Tony, I haven't even worked for a while. I was at that point, that sort of semi-retired point. Before this, it was just the clerical work I did. It's nothing special, no big career path. My children were a wee bit older. My children were growing up, and I'd been a terrible student the first time round. Absolute minimal amount of work needed to pass, and I just thought, this time I'm going to be a better student. And I found funding. I tracked down funding and things like that. And I did a master's degree at Glasgow University,
Yeah.
which is fabulous.
I mean, but at the same time, like when you say a clerk, you know who else was a clerk? Henry Miller. You know, these, it's
Ooh.
like, yeah, if it's who was working at the post office most of his life? Charles Bukowski. Who else was that? Who wasn't Kafka also like some type of clerk until, and he didn't even he and some of these people didn't even see their fame because they died out, and then they got published.
Exactly. Well, I'm quite lucky. I'm getting a little bit in before I go.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I'm always trying to get I think about death way too much. So when I was who was I talking to the other day? Somebody said, oh, it's really, really morbid. Oh, was it one of my students in my screenwriting workshop talked about how, because he's older and he's like, I'm trying to get as much in as possible right now. Time is different. And I was like, oh, you just hit the nail on the head. You know what I tell everybody when I get interviewed, they're like, what's your inspiration? And I'm like, death. I want to get more books on that shelf before I die. Like, that is the motivating factor for me to do some work in a way. It's even though it's morbid, it's like life is a ticking
Your
clock.
ultimate motivator,
Yeah, so what do you want to do with this ticking clock? And I think being a novelist is one of the most noble approaches to life, because we get to dive into ourselves and also dive into the craft of telling a story, and a story that connects with other people. There's magic
It's
there.
a very privileged place to be in. It really is, and I'm so grateful that this is the position I'm in. That, as I say, it's like my dream.
Yeah. Who did you read growing up? Was there some authors where you're like, where really you were just like, oh, I want to be that one day. Maybe I will. I know that's a hard question. That's like one of the hardest questions during a pressure interview to ask you specific authors. So you could think about it if you want, or if something comes up, you can tell me.
To be honest, I have read a re like all the words, like all the authors. I'm one of these people that have no specific genre. I've read across genres. I mean, everything from Irvine Welsh to Kafka, as you mentioned. I mean, I love Voltaire, and I equally love Stephen King. I have no filter when it comes to reading. And I will read romance, I will read sci-fi. I don't even have a specific favourite crime writer, although there's a huge amount of Scottish crime writers that I should mention who are absolutely so good.
Yeah.
But I'll read anything, Tony.
Now that you are on the Scottish crime writer circuit, these people who you've read for decades are now your peers. So you're like on panel with these people on the other you're on the other side of the table with them now.
It's very intimidating, and I am such a fangirl. It is awful. I've made such an absolute idiot of myself. I go to pieces when I meet another writer. I met Lee Child. It's so nice,
Oh,
and
he is great.
then
I
he's so
I've
kind
interviewed him
and
before.
warm.
He's a sweetheart. Like
Yeah,
I
he's
did
lovely.
yeah, I he like really like and plus he's deep. I didn't realize how deep he was, 'cause all I knew was Jack Reacher, and then you talk to Lee Child and then you're just sitting there going, "Oh, there's he's not like a it's not like he's not he doesn't even seem like a serious guy. He seems like a very literary and very
Yes, he really is.
Looking at
He's
the
lovely
human
as well.
condition situate, and that's what it's just. Anyway, you got me excited over Lee Child. This is what we do. We fan out over people that we can talk to.
Yeah, we need such an amazing nice guy, and I asked him if he had seen the Loch Ness Monster. I mean, almost randomly, he mentioned that he'd been in Scotland, and I said, "Have you seen the Loch Ness Monster?" I just go to pieces with when I meet other writers. I've got to go over it. It's shocking, shocking.
Yeah. Okay, and it's yeah, and then you have that moment where you're like, I wish I can go back in time and be a little like I wish I can go back in time and
Cool.
re and re yeah, I could be cool if I can go back in time and like cool down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've been an idiot in many situations, and I go, oh man, I could have been not so dumb, and maybe that person that I have adored for decades from afar may have given me a little chance of a conversation instead of oh my God, can somebody get this weirdo away from me? And I'm like, oh, I'm being weird. I don't even know how to stop being weird. I'm drooling. I don't know what's going on. So you wait, what is it? Well, it sounds like you also grew up in the punk rock era. Am I getting that
Yes,
right?
I did.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
What?
Yes, I was a young punk rocker in
Mm-hmm.
Scotland, and it's one of the reasons I based the novel in 1979, just so I could name check all my favourite bands. And you could read the novel on the punk rock content alone. It's a bit shallow, I know that, but it is one of the reasons that I chose 1979. I love punk rock. And I still go and see bands just now.
Yeah,
And the old lady at the back.
I feel you. I'm the old man at the back now too. I used to be the kid flipping through the air in the front, you know, and then now I'm just like the guy that I used to think with. I was like, why is my grandpa here? This is for me. And I'm just like now I'm like I'm the grandpa walking in. They're like,
That's you.
yeah, no, it's the circle of punk rock life. What bands have you seen recently that you stood in the back for?
Oh, there's a British band called Idols who are really exciting. They're excellent, and I'm a huge Nick Cave fan. Nick
Oh,
Cave and the
yeah.
Bad Seeds. I love Nick Cave. Go and see him all the time.
Oh, you're talking to
And
the guy. I'm the
since
Nick
the
Cave
80s, yeah.
guy.
Really, yeah.
Oh my God. I love Nick
Okay, we're
Cave.
pals now, Tony. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's
Pals for life.
yeah, so did you see the birthday party when they came to the UK?
I did, yeah, way, way back,
Oh.
yeah, in the mid-80s. So it's almost now, it's almost like a sort of spiritual experience, the live
Yeah.
gigs. So you come out and oh, you see people weeping, you know, that they're crying,
Yeah.
and it's a huge connection. He's such a performer. I
Well,
love Nick.
and what a fascinating journey for him to actually like age well as a rock star. Because when you think about the birthday party, how many other bands at the time were doing like the same thing and then never got out of doing the same thing? And at some point, you just go, at your age. And like Nick Cave just like acts his age, but he does it with such swagger and coolness. It's like,
He
oh, he's
does.
68. You don't think twice because you're just like, he's not trying to fit into leather pants and cut his chest open like, you know, the old days. It's like, no, that was the old me. Now I got a gospel backup singers. Now we're gonna have a spiritual experience.
We have all grown with him, I think that's the thing.
It's true. Yeah, the growing with him. And I think that's where people like us. I didn't find him until 1990. And that was the first time I saw him live. But there's just this beauty of like being along for the ride of his artistic output, as well as
Yeah,
his live shows
absolutely,
that
yeah.
have changed. And but now he's in stadiums. It's so hard. He plays
It's odd,
stadiums. I'm like, well, I don't know. I can't do it. Oh, Nick, you
It's
know, I am
exciting.
so happy for him. He is the guy that should play stadiums and get all the accolades, but there's something in me where I'm like, I can't go to a stadium show. Oh.
Yeah. You're real old school, Tony.
Oh, and it gets in my way. Like, I use these things get in my way. Why should I be upset about, I just don't like big crowds these days. And I don't
There
like
is
the
there's
iPhone.
nothing to beat a small gig. Yeah, there is absolutely nothing to beat a gig in a small venue, a pub, or just a couple of hundred people. That's
Yeah.
it's absolute. It's class. It really is. You get that atmosphere, and you're part of it. You really are. You're more part of
Right.
it.
Yeah, there's not so much security staff funneling you around, trying to figure out where, trying to place 8,000 to 10,000 people. It's just like you just walk in and go, hi, and then have a drink and watch the show. Oh, that's fantastic. The birthday party in the 80s just. Oh, I wish I could live vicariously through
Very
you.
privileged.
I wish I could go straight into your. I know you got a book out or whatever, but man, they'd be at the birthday party in the 80s. No.
Important things, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, yeah, those it's so beautiful that there's so many new fans too. There are people who
yeah.
didn't know of Nick Cave until Ghost Teen. And then they're like, "Oh,
Yeah.
that old man sounds good." And you're just looking at you just
Yeah.
kind of looking at him like, "What brings you here?" Huh? If
Yeah,
I would have found
and they
out
look like
about him.
grandchildren. They are so young.
Yeah, I went and saw Tom Jones, I think, when Tom Jones was like 50 years old, and there was like all these old people and like maybe nine punk rockers who were just kind of going there for we were just kind of going there for the hey, this will be a kitschy to do, and it was just fantastic because he puts on a great show. But it's all the hits,
Imagine,
and it's just like
yeah.
do they think that but I don't think they're looking at it the same way because Nick Cave shows move you, and even now, it's, how does he do it? How does he do it?
Yeah, absolutely. He's very special.
Yeah. Anyway, so you decide to go to university for the degree in creative writing. Now you could have went to university for a degree in sculpture. You could have went to university for a degree in economics. So what is it about the creative writing masters that you go, you know what? I'm going for that.
Thing is such a huge writer, such a huge reader. I just felt it would be amazing to learn how they did it. I wasn't expecting really to write anything. My dream was possibly a short story, having a short story published in a lit mag or something. That was my small dream, and I just wanted to know. These people like James Joyce and all the people that I loved, that I wanted to know, how do they do that? That it was more a curiosity rather than any sort of ambition for the future. And it had an absolutely amazing teacher, a Scottish crime writer, Louise Welsh, and she just blew me away. I wasn't expecting to write crime at all or a novel, but Louise had this mantra that crime writing is never just about the crime. So we've studied all these amazing novels on looking at different levels, things like gender and class, poverty, social problems, all the things that are included in crime writing, but that you're not necessarily aware of. And that is just something clicked. It was like that road to Damascus moment, and well, I'm having some of that. I'm going to be a crime writer.
Fascinating.
She
And
was
then,
an absolutely amazing tutor. One of
yeah.
these tutors that changed your life.
Oh, that's beautiful. And then you decide, you know what, I'm going to go for the novel. I'm diving into writing a
Again,
novel.
that was Louise. Again, that was Louise Welsh. I handed in my little assignment at the end of term, And she said, you know, the child voice in this, the voice of the child, could sustain a novel.
So to you were so sustaining a novel from the point of view of the voice of is it Samantha? Am I getting that right?
Jeannie, the little girl
Jeannie.
is called Jeannie. Yeah,
Jeannie.
she's
So
12, Jeannie, yeah.
were you writing short stories from the point of view of this character, and that's how your instructor went, wait a second, that you dig deeper into this because this is something.
That's exactly, yes. And a few chapters into the novel, it became sort of obvious that the child voice could not sustain a novel. It was just becoming annoying, you know, that so I added Janie's grandmother, his name is Maggie, as a sort of a contrast. There's a difference in understandings, as the child understanding of what has happened, and the contrast with the older woman who understands, but not necessarily more, but different things. She sees different things that the child doesn't. And originally, I was going to make it Janie's mum. It was going to be her mum. But I saw an interview with a writer, Bernardine Evaristo, and she's a fantastic writer. And she was sort of complaining about the lack of older women in fiction. And she said, it's a real shame because we're so much more interesting. The older women have so much history. And it's
Oh,
absolutely true, you know, we are quite interesting. So that was the point. I decided to split the narrative between a child and a mature lady.
I agree with you 100%. Older women are more interesting, hands down. I will die on that. I will stake my flag and die on that. When you're writing these characters, because I feel like when we're writing a young child voice, we're really tapping a voice that's inside of us. Do you kind of picture yourself when you're writing a young voice that it's filtering through your young experiences?
Absolutely, yes. I think it would be difficult not to, but it's also fiction. It's a fictionalized version of yourself. Maybe this is similar to what you did yourself, Tony. Your sort of your narrative of growing up and the Jehovah's Witnesses. It's a sort of fictionalized version of yourself, and it's difficult to do. To get the balance between your character and your own self. And even the older lady in it, this part of myself and her, especially because she's sort of a loud Glaswegian woman, spit me in there.
At the same time, I feel like we the and this is what I tend to do is I start my characters a lot closer to me, but then the characters show who they are and they're not me. And then that's when it's fascinating. Because I've and thanks for doing research on me and knowing that I wrote a book. But in that book there was a character that his name was he was the uncle that was kind of helping the young man, and that was me too. That was just two different versions of me, except I realized it would be so much more fun if the uncle was dumb. After about the third or fourth draft, I'm like, wait, this guy's got too much wisdom. No, I don't need a philosopher. I need an idiot. That'd be funny. That's the dichotomy. I want this guy to be such an idiot, and yet the young guy to go, this guy knows everything. And then that's where these characters take off, and they're not me anymore. They've taken their own shape and form.
Exactly. There is an absolute divide. You're not your characters. I'm not my characters. But there's obviously parts of you in there that you just can't. I guess you could never shake it.
Well, I don't think we want to shake it because that's where the authenticity of the story comes in, because when they say write what you know, I mean, we write what we know, because it's not that it's easy to write what we know, but because I almost said the word easy, which is wrong. I tell my students writing is easy, but it's really hard. So it's easy when you just show up, but it's hard because you got to show up a lot, and it's not what you think. And every student that I've ever had, ones that went off to publish, have been, oh my God, if I knew how hard this was, I would have never done it. And I'm like, exactly. You found out. Welcome to the club. Did you have that same experience where you thought you were going to?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
There are points, at least 5 different points where I was ready to scrap the whole thing, where I thought, I can't do this. This is just rubbish. Rubbish is not the adjective I use to describe it. But it's just the perseverance, I think, is the difference. It's what you need. More than talent, perseverance is a big part of being a writer.
Yeah, oh, exactly. And fighting with our own minds, because our minds are against us as well. Our intellectual side is going, what the hell are you doing? Let me just take this over so we can make it a very intellectual, and you're just going, get out of the way. Get out of the way. There's emotion involved, man. Get out of the way. So, yeah, it's how yeah from how, when did you start with your young character, and then when were you able to start pitching the book? And when I say pitching the book, that means you have the final draft almost ready to go, perfect when you're actually sending it out.
I finished writing it. It took me about a year to write from start to finish, and a year of self-editing, because obviously the first draft is just a pile of crap. It's awful, absolutely awful. So about 2022, I thought, that maybe I should send this out. Maybe I should try for an agent. And I was just very, very lucky to find the right agent, right time, right place. That was all it was, Tony. Nothing more than that. It was just exactly the sort of Scottish thing after Shuggie McBain. After the success of Shuggie McBain, I think they were more open to books written in dialect, in Scottish dialect. So, right place, right time.
I mean, with Irvin Welsh was doing that, what, 30 years ago almost, right? I mean, it wasn't just Scottish dialect, it was phonetic Scottish. But yeah, it was great. It was because it was
Even I
so,
struggle. We struggle with speech, button.
yeah, it was so foreign that I was fascinated by it, and that's why I picked up his work, because I'm like, this is different, and I'm in. So it's, yeah.
And I'm a huge passionate supporter of dialect. I love local dialect. I love vernacular. I love to read things written in dialect. Marlon James writes amazing dialect, the Jamaican patois. I love that, and it's a wee bit more effort involved in reading a book in dialect, but I think it's worth it. I really do.
And
D
it's.
do you notice in America, Tony? Is there a flattening of dialect in America,
In the
or are
publishing
your local
industry?
dialects still quite strong?
Oh, in general or in the publishing industry?
Yeah, in general, yeah.
In general, it's fascinating because we've got so much screen time. Yeah, we're losing the local accents. Even I used to be able to tell a San Franciscan from someone from Los Angeles like that. There are regional accents, and I used to be able to tell immediately, and I could still tell, but it's just not there anymore. It's kind of.
Yeah, it's exactly the same as Britain. It's a lot flatter. I mean, that there are specific cities who cling very, they love their dialect and they will not ever let them go. But in general, you don't hear that strength of the dialect that you used to. It's a shame, a real shame.
It is. It really is because I love, I just love the idea of the regional dialect. And I was when I was in New York, I just have so much like you go to Brooklyn and everyone speaks, sounds exactly like me, which I got the lazy tongue, California accent. I'm just and that's what Brooklyn's like now. But when you find the guys who are the working class, Brooklyn, where they're doing where they're out there doing the heavy lifting, those guys still have the accent. And I'm like, I want to talk to them because I want to hear that. I want to listen to that Brooklyn accent, that hard Brooklyn accent. That's just, and I was in Boston about 5 years ago, and you really don't hear a lot of Boston accent when you're in Boston, but when you hear that Boston accent, oh, you're going, am I in Good Will Hunting? Am I in the movie? And you're just like, but it's just like, no, these people, this is like, and I was in Philadelphia and the Philadelphian accent is just, I'm like, oh, I'm in love with your accent. And it's just amazing. And it tends to be more of the working classes that really keep the accent. And I
Definitely,
grew up, my family were mechanics and truck drivers and, taxi drivers. So I grew up, and this is in San Francisco. So I grew up with that. So that's why I could pick out the San Franciscan accent, is because of growing up and listening to the San Franciscans. Where, anyway, yeah. But yeah, I love that you're. Go ahead.
It's very similar in Britain. It is the working class that hang on to their accent, and in Glasgow they just don't give two hoots whether anyone can understand them or not. This is the way we speak, and if you don't get it, too bad,
It's I have a friend of mine, Scottish. He lives in San Francisco. His name's Alan Black. He's got a book out too, and still does literary stuff. But I find myself if I'm hanging out with him too much, I start to talk a little like him if I can, and it's I know I'm doing a terrible accent, and I'm bastardizing everything that's. Yeah, it's like I don't see. I don't even know. I'm in the middle of the sea over by like Dublin, but kind of coming up toward Edinburgh, and it's just I have this weird thing where I just love people's speech patterns so much that when I was younger, I'd always try to copy them, and then it still kind of comes out a little bit, and all it does is make me look like a fool to the natives. Yeah, so if and when I'm in Glasgow one day, I'm gonna really try not to do that because I don't want to get beat up. No, I'm telling you, I just love it, man. I love it. I'm just telling you. And I think I went to Jamaica there for a second in that voice, so. But I would it's funny, last year I was in Portugal and I was in France, and when people would speak English, it was very clean English. And I would always ask, how did you learn English? And most of the time, it was the TV show Friends. And I'm like, that is hilarious, because they would learn enough English and then they loved Friends, so they'd watch all the episodes. So they all sound like the idiots on Friends. I never been able to watch that show, but I'm glad it translates to other cultures where they learn English enough where I go, oh, parlez-vous anglais? And they're like, yeah, I watched Friends. And I'm like, okay, because I didn't watch any
Got it.
French kid sitcom, so thank you. have you been to the United States?
Just Disneyland. I actually took my kids to Disneyland when they were very small, so but it was such a lovely, friendly, warm welcome, you know, and I mean, no one can resist Disneyland. It was
No,
lovely. I loved
exactly.
it.
So your experience at Disneyland, that's exactly what the United States is like. That's our whole culture. We just like we have stuffed animals who walk around and hug you. You know, it's a small world after all. It's just love and peace and harmony. It's great. It's great. Yeah, so are you going to be able to do some are to some touring with the book to get to like even like New York or something?
Well, I'm not sure yet, Tony.
Yeah.
Obviously, it will depend on the reception it gets.
Yeah.
It was just such a surprise that Soho signed up. They took a chance on it. They really did because of
Yeah.
the dialect. There's a lot of swearing in it. There's a lot of very specifically Scottish things in it, and I was just so shocked. Also, so grateful. It's an amazing experience. And what they have done in the American version, there's a glossary at the
I
back,
saw that,
so that
yeah.
if you struggle with some of the Glasgow words, there you
Yeah.
can look them up.
With
And it
ye saying.
was
I love it.
that's
No,
it.
it it's it I mean
You
it's
saying?
yeah, it fits perfectly with to continue the voice of the book, where it's just like it works. I love stuff like
When
that. Like we need more. We need more of that in the publishing industry. There's a real sadness in the United States publishing industry right now. Fortunately, Soho's pretty good, but there's just a very neutering, generic storytelling that they just eat up. They don't want to take any chances on anything right now. It's just it's so anti-taking chances that we're really losing the joy of great authors. It's getting to the point where
Right.
I have a hard
So
time
very
read.
grateful.
Yeah, I have a hard time reading authors that have anything out before 2010 because I'm just like, oh, I'm just going to read the same book over and over again. And I don't know if the attention span of the younger generation just doesn't understand that there's like a beauty in a piece of in a novel that doesn't just tingle them like a Netflix show, but even if it's so-called literary fiction, you could still tell
That sort of depth,
it's just like, oh, this is written for people who Netflix and chill. This isn't written for people who really love to dive into anything of more substance, you know. Not that there's anything wrong with that. As a writer, I'm here to entertain, but I am here to entertain with a couple of I used to say this. It's like I want my narrative to like kind of give you a hug and then punch you, and then give you another hug. Just have a really abusive relationship with the reader, but they keep getting the hugs.
That sort of cutting edge, you miss that sometimes. I used to think that that was because of my age, and I used to think, well, I have read it all before, I'm just not getting this because I'm a bit older. This is obviously aimed at younger people. But now I do start to wonder if it is just missing that absolute thrill of the different of something out there, something really different that grabs you. I got this with Ian Banks' book, The Wasp Factory. When I first read The Wasp Factory, it blew my mind. I thought, this is an incredible thing. I love this. And the publishers took a big risk on that because it was just so controversial. And the first paperback that came out, they actually marketed it with all the negative comments from the media. You know, this book
Yeah.
should be banned. This book is an outrage. This book, and it's just what I wanted, you know. That's I wanted
Yeah.
a book that was that should have been banned, a book that was outrageous,
Yes.
that the critic thought was shocking, you know.
Oh my
I
God.
miss out.
I mean, the greatest books of our time have been banned on certain levels. Even Ulysses was banned, wasn't it? It's like they and it's and I read Ulysses for the first time about 3 years ago. And I did it
I've
through
never got through
well,
it.
I gave it two tries before and I threw it across the room both tries. And then I decided to take a class on it. And it was like a lighthearted class where they gave you a 20-minute introduction for the three episodes that we're going to read, and then we'll come back in 3 weeks and there'll be an hour lecture on that. And a lot of the time, most of the handholding was like, "Hey, if you're not getting it, don't worry. Just keep going." And I gotta tell you, when I got about halfway through the book, my eyes started to open. When I got to the end of the book, it's one of the very few books I've read that I've cried at the end. And
Really,
yeah,
yeah.
because the it emotional it was it's an important novel. I was, oh my God, I think this is the top one of the top 10 of the 20th century. After I
You should
finally
give it
got through
another
it.
go, yeah.
Yeah, and I want to read it again because our instructor said the first time you read Ulysses is the second time you read Ulysses, because then it's like then you kind of got it, and you know what's going on. And it's but yeah, that was banned. Henry Miller was banned, and I'm went nuts over Henry Miller. And so these so-called problematic writers are actually important in our culture, and I feel like, especially with the people coming out of their MFA programs and all those things, and going to become agents and going to become publishers, and this whole new way of gatekeepers, they're scared of any offense, just like my students are scared to offend. Like I've never experienced this much people holding back, and I'm like, "What are you doing? That's crazy. Why aren't you going there?" And they're like, "Oh my God, I can never go there." And I'm like, if you say that, that's where you have to go. And
Yeah,
people aren't
exactly.
telling
Yes,
them that.
especially when you're young, especially when you're young, that I think it's the only way to learn where your own line in the sand is to experience it. And you won't experience it if you keep everything very bland and very sterile.
Yeah. Yeah, and so yeah, and I talk to these younger people, and just even at book events, and they only like what makes them feel good. And I'm like, "You shouldn't feel good. What are you feeling good about?
Oh.
Life is
Want to feel
hard."
uncomfortable,
Yeah. Yeah. What are you doing feeling good? And then in the end, maybe I should just feel good. Maybe it's my problem. What's wrong with happiness?
yeah, that's true.
So you got your agent in 2022, and now we're in 2026. So did you know that lead time to a book takes this long?
I did not know.
It's another lesson, isn't
I,
it?
I, what I was also very naive about was the amount of editing
Yeah.
involved. I had that sort of, well, I've edited it, so here you are. And I thought they would say, well, that's lovely, yes. Oh my goodness, I had no idea the amount of big red marks over everything. Everything is edited again.
Yeah.
Re-edited. It's that's and I realize now that is where your book is actually written, in the editing and not in the original manuscript.
But
It really comes together.
at the same time, we have to create problems. It's like in order to fix the puzzle, we have to have a puzzle. So we
Of
have to
course,
when
yeah.
so let's just make a mess. So then there's a puzzle for us to fix. A puzzle for us to
Yeah.
fix. So then when we go, "Oh wait, I think I fixed the puzzle," and you give it to someone else, and they're like, oh, you know, this puzzle's not totally fixed. And you're like, no, I'm sure it is. And then they show you a couple things. You're like, oh, the puzzle's not fixed. You're right. Okay, let's go back.
Yeah, and I was so embarrassed by some of the plot holes, the original plot holes. So embarrassed, you know. How could I have ever sent that to anyone? Just held my head in shame.
Right, and the beauty of just doing it anyway and not quite knowing that, oh, it just got dark in Glasgow where we're on the Zoom. It was it
Would you
like
mind,
it,
Tony, if I just popped a light on it to
yeah,
come down? It
pop a light
gets
on.
dark so easily.
What do you remember when you were younger and the birthday party broke up and then Nick Cave started doing his solo stuff? Were you put off by that when you were younger?
Was a wee bit. It was just so he looked so different, you know. The suits suddenly appeared, and I wanted the leather jacket again. But the music still spoke to me, and the fact that I had aged with Nick as well, that I was ready to calm it down a wee bit too. By the time he calmed down, I was also calmed down a bit.
Yeah, because that's another. What I love about Nick and following his career, his artistic put out output is that he's changed, and when he changes, it's an authentic thing because he's like, I'm changing. It's almost like the audience gets what they deserve, not what they demand. It's just like now I'm this, so I'm not going to pretend like I was Mutiny in Heaven era. I am now the good son, you know, and you're just going, okay, I guess I'm still on. And then you listen over and over, and you're like, and you see him live, and the live incarnations of the songs are usually a little more violent and a little more, you know, and it's just like, oh, I'm still in.
It must take a fair amount of confidence for an artist to do that, you know, some amount of self-confidence to say, this is who I am now, and if you like it, fair enough. If you don't, you can leave it, you know. And a lot of the people think they're afraid to do that. They're afraid to be their own self.
It's hard to stand out because as humans, we want so much to be part of the tribe and to be accepted and to be liked and to be just, I mean, that's just such a natural, innate thing of humanity. So in order to shift it with our art, it's an intense thing to do, especially with someone who actually has a fan base who's going to disregard him. And I think he had a huge fan base that disregarded him when he went with the duet with Kylie Minogue. If I remember, I read they lost all of Japan. Like Japan just his Japan audience just went, we're out. Why did you do a duet with her? We're out. We're done. And I don't think they've toured Japan since. I don't think there's been ever another tour of Japan after probably Let Love In. So, not to say
I
that
did
all.
actually meet him once, Tony.
What's that?
I have met Nick.
Have you?
Do you know the book that he wrote? It's a sort of a meditation on grief after he lost his sons. And he was doing a signing of the book, and I queued for about an hour to meet him. And it was just so lovely. He confessed to being nervous.
Well, that
And the
was
book
so
is
vulnerable.
yeah the book itself is so beautifully written, and the man has such an amazing way with words, his songwriting, and this is so heartfelt. I don't think I've ever read a book on grief that moved me as much as Nick Cave's book. It was so amazing. And I'm not saying that as a fan of his music. I'm saying that as a reader, as a fan of literature.
And I read that book when I was going through, that book kind of came out when I was going through some heavy grief, and that book carried me. And it didn't carry me just because it was Nick Cave. It carried me because what was spoken of about grief and the
Yeah.
how grief moves in different ways. And not in this new age, oh no, you just get over your grief if you go to this retreat with us and chant, you know. It's just like, no,
Yeah. Yeah.
this is the hard truth, but it also brings us back to embracing humanity. And it's, I mean, that's like that it that's that rings of authenticity right there. So I can cling to that because that makes sense, rather than these other people that are trying to sell grief counseling. You're just going, you're
Yeah.
insane. Just buy crystals. If you buy, you don't have crystals.
Yeah.
What are you doing without crystals? How can you grieve without crystals? You know, and you're just going, yeah, get out of here. Anyway.
It's a very powerful, very powerful meditation on grief. It's so lovely.
And
Amazing
it's
book.
yeah, and I feel like I grieved for him when he lost his first son to the cliff,
Yeah.
and then when he lost his second son, and he was a lot less open about that. But I guess it turned out that the mother of his of that of Jethro w really wanted him to not talk about it, and he like was,
Yeah,
and so he
he
was.
respected that. Yeah.
Yeah, and which is says a lot too about him that he respected that, and because that's a tough place to be when you want to talk about the death of your son,
Yeah.
and a mom is like, "Dude, you're public, and I don't want this to be public. I'm not public. We're not public on this one." It's like, all right. So, it's, I mean, it's yeah, it's beautiful. Speaking of beautiful. Her name is Frances Crawford, and her book is called A Bad, Bad Place, a novel. Frances, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Tony, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you for putting up with my awful accent.
Your awful accent. And see, oh my God, it's the if I didn't know about your book, it'd be the only reason to have you on the show is to listen to your accent for an hour.
You're so nice, Tony, and I really appreciate it. It's been a brilliant chat. Really great.
Oh, Frances Crawford. Thank you for listening. That was so much fun. How was that cave talk, huh? I've been so excited to get this one out there. Reminder, April 1st, I'm teaching at the Los Feliz Branch Public Library at 6 p.m. You just show up if you live in Los Feliz or Los Angeles area. And the next one is May 6th at 6 p.m., the same time. We're doing the first Wednesday of the month pretty much every month. Also, I'm doing a private novel writing workshop. Join the workshop. We start April 20th. For information, go to drinkswithtony.com or tonyduchesne.com. That's drinkswithtony.com or tonyduchesne.com to register for my 5-week workshop, limited to 6 students. We are going to go hard on the novel. Beginners welcome. Medium novelists welcome. I love the crowd of interchange of ideas. Thanks a lot for listening. You've been listening to Drinks with Tony. I'll see you next week. You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCRLP 92.9 FM Los Gatos and KMRTLP 101.9 FM Santa Cruz.
Well, distant thunder rumble. down. The beast it cometh down. The beast it cometh down. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Tupelo bow. Yeah. Ah, Tupelo. The beast it cometh Tupelo bow. Why him only no egg? Can't get that cock to crow. The nag is spooked and crazy. Oh, God, up a Tupelo. 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 You can say these streets are rivers. You can call these rivers streets. You can tell yourself you're dreaming, but even no sleep runs this deep. No, no sleep runs this deep. No, no sleep runs this deep. Oh, women at their window, rain crashing on the pane, riding in a frost. Tupelo shame, Tupelo shame, Tupelo shame, Tupelo shame. Oh, God, oh, Tupelo. Oh, God, oh, Tupelo. Oh, God, oh, Tupelo. Oh, my God, up a Tupelo. Oh, go to sleep, little children. The Sandman's on his way. Oh, go to sleep, little children. The Sandman's on his way. But the little children know. But the little children know. Hey, listen to the beating of their blood. 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 Sandman's mud. The Sandman's mud. The Sandman's mud. The Sandman's mud. And Black Rain come down. The Black Rain come down. The Black Rain come down. Oh, water, water everywhere. Water, water everywhere. Well, no bird can fly, no fish can swim. No bird can fly, no fish can swim. No fish can swim. Until the king is born. Until the king is born. In Tupelo. Until the king is born in Tupelo. In a clapboard shack with a rubber tip. Where the rain crashed down and it leaked within. A young mother frozen on the concrete floor. And a bundle in a box and a cradle of straw. Tupelo. Oh, Tupelo. In a bundle in a box and a cradle of straw. A Saturday gives what Sunday steals. And a child is born. Brother's heels. Sunday morning, a fist born dead, and a shoebox tied with a ribbon of red. Tupelo. Ah, Tupelo. And a shoebox buried with a ribbon of red. Oh, the mama rock your little one slow. Mama rock your baby. Mama rock your little one slow. God help a Tupelo. God help. Mama rock your little one slow. Mama rock your little one slow. The little one walk on Tupelo. The little one will walk on Tupelo.
Black rain come down. Black rain come down. 2 years of litter in a bonafone. Years of litter in a bonafone. What does he bump on a down? With the marionette carry away. And the king will walk on Tupelo. The king will walk on Tupelo. The carry the bird on Tupelo. And carry the bird.
Tupelo. He carried the burden of Tupelo.